Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. And I also have another extremely exciting announcement to make before I get to the rest of today's episode. You can now find the MTG in Quarantine podcast on Patreon. So definitely make sure to go to patreon.com/mtginquarantine to support the channel and see how you can help me create more awesome content. Now, on to the show. So, I have the White in MTG is Good, actually, series on the podcast quite often with my good friends Mono Whiteboarder and Coach J-Ro to talk about all things Mono White. But we haven't really talked specifically about a single Mono White deck in particular in that series, so we are going to change that today. So, I'd like to introduce my new guest to the show, Andy from the Commander's Forge. Welcome, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So, a couple weeks ago, you mentioned that you had a pretty sweet Linden Steadfast Queen deck. Talk to me more about that. How did that deck come to be? What does it look to do? And why do you believe that Linden is an underrated commander?
Well, truth be told, the idea for the deck actually came from Shivan Button, Benjamin Wheeler, when they talked about Mono White and how it's underrepresented on Shivam's podcast. And I'd been kicking around this idea for a white deck for a little bit, and that really made me pull the trigger on Linden, because Linden in particular is not a popular commander, and you really don't see how her, like, really stupid life gain triggers can be weaponized, and I wanted to turn the tables on that.
All right, so before we get started on this one, could you remind the audience of what exactly Linden does?
I can. Linden is a 3/3 for white. With vigilance, and whenever a white creature you control attacks, you gain one life.
Okay, so basically mono-white, in theory, what it seems to be suggesting, you know, I could be wrong in your build, but it seems to be suggesting that you want to be creating a lot of creatures and turning them sideways in order to gain life for various life gain payoffs.
Correct.
So, what about your Linden deck specifically really excites you, especially since we have had these discussions on the White is Good in MTG series about why a lot of people in the community think that White is underpowered, specifically because they believe that the life gain payoffs may not be worth the hassles you have to go through, there's lack of card draw, yada, yada, yada. What about this deck specifically really excites you and tries to and keeps you coming back to playing that deck, even if, quote-unquote, White is not actually that good in the eyes of most players?
Right. When I was sitting down to build this deck, I found that most people look at white, and when they think of a good white deck, they think of a Stax build. I don't want to play Stax in Casual Commander. I will play Stax in CEDH. That's my Thalia deck. This is low to the ground, get out there quick, and then when I need to, like, huddle down, I still want to be able to get through.
Okay, so you mentioned before the show that you have four pillars that this deck is built upon. Could you go through each one of those really quickly and then talk about how your deck works and how you ultimately try to win with it?
Right. So our first pillar is going to be low to the ground. The main goal is to always have something on the field, always be able to redeploy stuff. The average CMC of the deck, I believe, is 2.79 currently. And it's only that high because I have a couple 7 drops. But other than that, it's very low to the ground. Our second pillar is going to be tokens, because they're replaceable. Anything that you destroy, I want to be able to quickly redeploy. Then our third is our anthems, which I don't see why that doesn't get played a lot more in white decks. And then our fourth one is going to be our survivability. And that is turning the tides on being able to draw cards and being able to survive board wipes and all of that.
Okay, so you're going to be trying to create a lot of tokens here. You're going to be bumping them up, you're going to be swinging in, going to try to beat face with them. Seems like a very white-specific strategy there to try to get a whole lot of creatures out, gain life, swing, try to win through damage. But you also mentioned that you have, what, 30 lands in that deck? I'm curious to know how you're able to get around with that, seeming that that seems more like a CEDH-sized mana base than a regular casual mana base.
It does, but the reason I can justify it is if you look at the breakdown of my mana curve. The deck runs a total of 15 one-drops, 15 two-drops, and 23 drops. So three lands is kind of the bare minimum I need to hit in the deck. With four, I think I have 12, and then at five I have three, six I have one, and seven I have three. The whole goal of the deck is just hit my first three lands and I should be able to play 90% of my deck.
Yeah, and that definitely goes along with what we've talked about in the White in MTG is Good, actually, series, where we have posited the opinion that in White you don't necessarily have to try to keep up ramping with the other players at the table. You just want to make sure that you can consistently hit your land drops to ensure that you can play the cards in your hand and make sure that you're able to execute your game plan the same as those other players at the table. So instead of trying to speed yourself up, you're just trying to make sure that you have the tools you need to be able to play on curve. And since obviously you have a very low mana curve here, as long as you have two lands in your opening hand, you probably should be good because you'll probably draw into a third land in at least by turn three or four. If you're absolutely unable to draw one your first turn, you should be pretty much good to go from the get-go.
Yeah, and I can actually tell you, I've kept one land hands that have three one drops and then not drawn a second land until turn four and still come out of that game on top.
Okay, so again, we have been talking about how Linden is an underrated commander, and we have to kind of think about, again, what her ability is. So you're going to be getting these life gain payoffs. Are you utilizing any specific payoffs for gaining life in there, something like a Griffin Airy or just any of those pieces that we've gotten in the last year or two, which give you a lot of interesting token payoffs for life gain? I'm just curious to know if you're able to find a way to weaponize that life gain.
Well, one of the best ways I've weaponized it recently is Dawn of Hope, which is an enchantment from Ravnica. And whenever you gain life, you can pay two to draw a card. But on top of that, you can also pay four to make a 1/1 white soldier. So this kind of fits into two of those pillars, survivability and tokens. As far as like the best weapon that Linden has, Archangel of Thune is a 3/4 angel for 3 white-white with flying and lifelink. But whenever you gain life, you put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. What people don't realize is Linden's triggers trigger separately. So if you attack with 5 white creatures and you have Archangel Thune out, that is 5 life gain triggers, putting 5 +1/+1 counters on each of those creatures.
Yeah, it's interesting to bring that up because that trigger stacks on itself because each creature technically triggers Linden a different time. And so instead of one of those kinds of effects where when one or more creatures attack, you gain 1 life, Linden definitely has the flavor, or sorry, not the flavor text, but the oracle text, I mean, where you are able to stack those triggers. So with the Archangel out there, yeah, that can really get out of hand very quickly. I can definitely see you're only gaining one, but sometimes that's all you need to be able to really start being able to boost your army, especially since you have other Anthem effects in the deck to be able to help push your army through.
Yeah, and my mini Archangel is Heliod Suncrowned, which is the 5/5, 2 and a white god with indestructible. As long as your devotion is less than 5, he isn't a creature. But whenever you gain life, you can put a +1/+1 counter on target creature or enchantment you control, and you can pay 1 and a white to give a creature lifelink until end of turn. So it's a nice little fallback on, say, Linden gets removed. I can still get stuff out there with lifelink and start putting counters on stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's It's interesting that you did bring this deck to the show, because while we don't necessarily see a whole lot of Linden builds, again, white is not the most popular color to play in the Magic community, and what specifically about this deck really excites you, especially when it comes to trying to dispel some of those myths about mono white?
There was a game I played, I want to say back in March, where my back was against the wall. I had a board, but somebody else had a bigger board. And they had alpha swung at me and somebody else. And being able to just say no, dropping a comeuppance and being like, no, you, and then turning around and just being able to overrun them. She runs enough interaction that it feels like when people try to mess with her, she has an answer. But even just... there are times where I'll play Linden and she will start as a 7-7 because I have four anthems on board. It's not necessarily her having one answer, it's her having multiple answers for multiple problems.
And white is definitely a color that has a lot of answers available to it. Obviously, you just mentioned comeuppance, but there are a lot of fog-like effects in white that I really prefer to play in some of my white builds, as well as a lot of ways to try to deal with opponents' terrifying things. You have a whole bunch of Oblivion Ring-type effects, you have Disenchant-type effects, you have Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile, which are two of the most powerful white cards in the game. You just have a whole suite of removal in mono white that allows you to make up for some of the color's other shortcomings. And that's definitely something that we've talked about on our podcast series, is white doesn't necessarily draw cards, but you are able to do a whole lot of other very useful things that in theory will make up for the lack of card draw or advantage, depending on obviously what kind of board you're able to keep there. But yes, it is very interesting to note how we are, as mono white players, are able to try to deal with some of those challenges by getting creative and utilizing some out of the toolbox solutions. We have to really think on our feet, but we're never usually alone as long as we have at least one white mana available to us.
Yeah, and mine is definitely centered more on the aggro side of things. So instead of running stuff like Oblivion Ring, I'm running stuff like Brave the Elements or Akroma's Will, Flawless Removal, Make a Stand, things that are gonna allow me to survive.
Sure, and obviously I was only talking about the reactive side because I've had to look at white in a different, more reactive way, but you're right. Mono white proactive does have a lot of interesting pieces. We did just get Flawless Maneuver last year, which is a free spell allowing all of your creatures to be indestructible for the entire turn, as long as you have your commander out, is effectively a free spell, as well as the entire suite of Make a Stand type cards where you are able to make your entire board indestructible, as well as Teferi's Protection should you need that for any reason. So yes, white does have a lot of ways to be reactive and proactive. Sounds like you've definitely leaned more into the aggressive side. And that definitely works with your commander more than, let's say, again, I'm going to use Coach J. Rowe's Hyxus Trixus deck using Hyxus Prison Warden, which is very reactive. But again, they're both a mono white. They can both have access to the same pool of cards, but they play extremely differently. So again, this is just one of those things where if you look at mono white, you can play in so many different ways. And I think that's really the key about white, is you have to get creative sometimes. But there are ways to be able to play in multiple ways, and Linden can definitely support an aggressive strategy. There's a lot of support for that. You have Glorious Anthem. You just have all those anthem effects in white. You have the Archangel. You have Cathar's Crusade, which is another very popular card for building your board, gaining counters, and then just smashing face. And that's definitely one of the things I personally like about white, is you can switch from proactive to reactive whenever you need to, and vice versa. Or you can stick with one or the other. It doesn't really matter because you have the tools that you need to really be successful either way.
Yeah, and I tend to keep my anthems on the cheaper side because, yes, Cathar's Crusade is a very powerful card, but in my case, I would rather spend 2 mana on Honor of the Pure. It's just, if I spend 2 mana instead of five, if I have five, that means an additional three drop that I can play or keep up for Teferi's Protection.
Sure. And again, I didn't mention that you should be playing Cathar's Crusade. Obviously, that's a card that works in some decks, not in all. And since you're trying to keep your mana curve down, it definitely doesn't make sense to be wasting it necessarily on a five drop that could easily get blown up. Whereas Honor of the Pure, for those who don't know, is an enchantment for one and a white, which gives all your white creatures +1/+1, which, while it doesn't have the same ceiling as Cathar's Crusade, definitely has a higher floor, I would say, versus just having that thing blown up immediately. And if it is, you're out 2 mana instead of five. So that's definitely one of those kinds of things that you have to think about when you're building a deck is what exactly am I trying to do with this card? You have to really evaluate, do I want the 2 mana +1/+1 guaranteed, or do I want to try to go for something that's a little bit riskier but costs 5 mana and could give me absolutely nothing in return?
Right. And I have to be very selective about where I put my high mana values. They have to be something that's going to say end the game or make it very possible for me to end the game. Like I mentioned, I have 3 7 drops. Well, one of those is a Chroma Vision of Ixalador, which is a 6/6 for 5 white/white with flying, first strike, vigilance, and trample. And at the beginning of each combat until end of turn, each other creature you control gets +1/+1 if it has flying, first strike, and so on for double strike, death touch, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, protection, reach, trample, vigilance, and partner.
Yeah, a Chroma is effectively what we call keyword soup. It's kind of going off the Audric, I think new Audric out of those two, which allows you to basically give all of your creatures. I mean, as long as one of your creatures has a keyword, a Chroma will give all of your creatures that keyword and makes them very scary. And that's why a Chroma's Will is such a good finisher in our format, is that it effectively does the same thing just for one turn.
Correct. But we're also running Akroma's Memorial, which is just a 7 mana artifact that gives your creatures flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, haste, and protection from black and red. So if you have Akroma's Memorial and then play Akroma, you're already giving all of your creatures a base +5/+5 at each combat.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would be a problem for your opponents. Yeah, it's especially good giving your white creatures trample because that's not something white typically gives for more than one creature, say with the random equipment. So being able
Right.
to give all of your creatures that same ability and then having pumped them up with anthems, and then if you do happen to have Linden on the field, be gaining additional life off that trigger. Yeah, that definitely sounds like a very good strategy to try to build up to, is that once you've gotten that 7 mana, hopefully you've built a good board, you've built yourself a good position where you have a high life total, and you can afford to have something blown up if that something absolutely terribly goes wrong. You have a way to try to rebound with that because you're in a better position, hopefully, than your opponents are by that point.
Right. And again, that kind of goes back into that survivability. We want to be able to say, I can make it to the end game and hang with you guys. I just might be a little more swingy about it.
And yeah, that is it's interesting to hear how you were able to find ways to be able to win that game. Are those the main two win conditions, or what are some of the other five drops you have in that deck, just out of curiosity?
Specifically at five drop. Let's see. One of our great hidden commanders, God Eternal Alketra. A 3/6 for 3 white/white with double strike, and whenever you cast a creature spell, you make a 4/4 black zombie warrior creature token with vigilance. When God Eternal Alketra dies or is put in exile from the battlefield, you put it into its owner's library, third from the top. So this fits into two of those pillars. The first one being survivability because you can keep bringing it back, and tokens. Notably, the tokens do not trigger Linden's ability, but I'll take a 4/4 over gaining one life.
And while those zombies will not trigger Honor of the Pure specifically, you do have enough other anthem effects. You can get those zombies up to 5/5, up to 7/7 or higher, just with a couple of those different effects too.
Yeah.
And you have a ton of creature spells at 1, 2, and 3, so you're hopefully going to be getting a lot of value off Oketra even without attacking with it.
Right. And then cycling back to something that you mentioned just a few minutes ago, Odric. And by Odric, I mean both Odrics. Luerc Marshall, the 3/3 for 3 and a white that says at the beginning of each combat, creatures you control gain first strike on a turn if they control have one with first strike. Same is true for flying, double strike, death touch, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, reach, skulk, trample, and vigilance. It brings the keyword soup part back in where I don't have all of those keywords, but giving everything flying and first strike can be really potent some turns.
You can never really go wrong with the Odrics. And the other one, again, I can never remember which one is which without looking them up. The one that allows you to or to dictate the terms of blocks and in the course of combat if you're attacking with at least three or more creatures, which in your deck sounds like you're going to be doing a lot of that. So there
Yes.
is something to be said for basically forcing your opponents to not be able to block if you're trying to swing in.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, I'll hold him back until I'm ready to do my Alpha Strike. Because just dropping him and saying, I don't care how many tokens you have, I'm just gonna take you to zero is one of the just the look on some people's faces you can get when you do something like that.
Sure. The fact that you can kind of snatch a victory out of nowhere is definitely one of those things that a lot of people don't see coming.
Yeah, a bunch of my five drops are kind of already been talked about, but I guess there is one that I actually just added. And that's a Gauntlet of Power, which is an artifact. When it enters the battlefield, you choose a color, creatures of the chosen color get +1/+1. And whenever you tap a basic land for the mana of the chosen color, its controller adds one mana of that color to their mana pool. So this can effectively double all of our white mana and fits into that anthem category.
But yes, you do have to be careful with that one because that will also double everyone else's planes. So that is a bit of a challenge that you have to work around.
Correct, but I'm willing to bet that my white spells are better than their white spells.
Sure, and that's definitely the kind of thing, no matter what color you play Gauntlet of Power in, you have to be careful with that. We're not going to say it's the best. You could actively hurt yourself with it, but as long as you're getting and driving the most value off of it, most of the time it's only going to help you, not hurt you.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of my potent spells sit between the 3 and 4 mana slot. Just because I have mostly those. Like, let's take Thalia, Heretic Cathar. Just a 3/2 for 2 and a white with first strike. But she makes creatures and non-basic lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped, which means a better ability for you to get through with your creatures.
I do run her in my human tribal deck, and it's always nice to be able to have that ability to slow your opponents down. Again, you can utilize that proactively or reactively if you absolutely have to.
White. Again, gets that rap for being the stacks color, but sometimes the stacks aren't necessarily for a stack stack, it's just to slow your opponents down.
Yeah, because you're not stopping your opponents from playing the game if you're just punishing them a little bit for playing creatures and non-basic lands, which again we in Commander love doing. And you're just slowing them down. You're forcing them to utilize resources, expend their resources, but you are getting a slight advantage over them. It's not stacks because you're not completely turning off their play strategy. You're just dictating the tempo a little bit.
Right. But another 3-drop that actually pairs really well with Linden is Resplendent Angel, which is a 3/3 for 1 white-white with flying. And at the beginning of each end step, if you gain 5 or more life this turn, you create a 4/4 angel creature token with flying and vigilance. And you can pay 6 until end of turn to give it +2/+2 in lifelink. But again, it's just one of those Oh, I'm gonna randomly gain 5 life when I attack at the end of the turn. I'm gonna make a 4/4. So now I've attacked you. I left a 4/4 back to block. If you can't get through that, the next turn I have another 4/4 to attack you with. It's a nice snowball effect.
You're able to utilize the life that you're gaining to gain payoffs, gain tokens, and just swing, swing, swing until everyone else is taken out. All right, well, I'd like to thank you for being on the show here today to talk about your Linden deck. It sounds really sweet.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Been enjoying your podcast for the last few months.
Oh, I really appreciate it. And where can we find your podcast, The Commander's Forge?
Well, the Commander's Forge is available on YouTube. It's also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and I want to say there's two other ones, but Anchor doesn't necessarily tell me everywhere it gets distributed to.
Yeah, that is a challenge. And speaking of where you can find podcasts, you can find the MTG in Quarantine podcast, including the entire White is Good in MTG, actually, series, with my friends Mono White Border and Coachy J-Row, on the usual channels, again, Spotify, Google, Apple, Player FM, MTG Cast, Overbox, Stitcher, and Rocket Cast, or, just a ton of different places. Again, Anchor is not the best at telling you, but it's in a lot of places, so if you go to a podcast outlet, you can probably find it. You can also find me on Twitter at @MTGInQuarantine. And again, I want to mention that we do have a Patreon now here with the MTG in Quarantine podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, which includes getting shout-outs at every single episode in the future, you can go over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine to sign up. Again, every little bit helps, and I would really appreciate your support. All right, again, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.